This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. Welcome to the podcast. I am stoked to have you on. Just to kick everything off, man, how's everything going?
Everything is wonderful. Can't complain. Living the dream, you know. You know how it is. Yeah, doing great, man. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Of course, man. Of course, Ian. So it looks like you have some solid natural sunlight behind you. Where are you based out of, man?
Right now, recently just moved from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I pretty much lived my whole adult life, at least, for sure. But so now I'm in Laguna Niguel, California, which is Orange County, pretty much like on the water in between LA and San Diego type of thing. But yes,
nice.
Usually very sunny, very fortunately. That was kind of a big part of the point was, you know, living and growing up in Wisconsin was heavy seasons. A lot of gray at certain times of the year. So I was like, you know, let's opt out of that for even just a little while. So yeah, it's my wife and I really enjoyed here thus far for sure.
Nice, man. Yeah, I feel you. So I originally grew up in Iowa before moving out to Colorado. So I understand the four seasons and the brutality of those Midwest winters sometimes. When did you move to California?
About like 6 months ago now. It was last year, in August. Yeah. So relatively fresh for sure. But, yeah, definitely feel good and settled in at the same time. So it's nice.
Nice, dude. Yeah. And so, I guess, yeah, let's talk us through your move. So aside from the sunshine and to switch up the weather, what was a major decision in you and your wife moving from Milwaukee to Cali?
Yeah, that sunshine weather honestly like was a large part for sure, just because like I said, we were both of us, we met in college, and that college was in Milwaukee as well. So we, our whole relationship prior to getting married was in Milwaukee. We lived together there, and you know, left college and started both of our respective endeavors after college in Milwaukee as well. And then, generally speaking, there in Wisconsin, not in Milwaukee, but we've lived in that general area, you know, like our whole lives. So it was just one of those like crossroad things where we, you know, were married for a couple of years there in Milwaukee. And we just had a really nice footing in life and in our, in both of our fields, I guess, you know, and then also, you know, obviously the pandemic had a pretty big effect because we started talking about relocating and just moving elsewhere because we have the ability to do so. Cause I can work wherever, you know, I can have a home studio pretty much, which is a huge luxury. So we started talking about it in 2020, and it's really funny how it ended up working out in retrospect, because we, at the top of 2020, before things really picked up with the pandemic, we had all our conversations and realized like, okay, New York, like we were going to move to upstate New York a little bit. Okay. Have a lot of great friends out there, from being able to kind of visit out there like several times over the past 4 years or so. I don't know if you know like Sunday Sauce, but that was like the initial group that in Travis, George. Yeah, that was the initial connection I had to go out there and play shows, and then just made a lot of really cool friends out there who are out in New York. So I was going to do that, but then literally I came back from a writer retreat in Woodstock, and it was the day that like Trump put the ban on the EU flights back and forth. So like going back to the airport in New York City, like it was like just ramping up and getting crazy. And then so I got home to my wife, and it was like New York City was becoming the epicenter like fast. So it was just so obvious. We were like, okay, like life is showing us, like put this on the back burner. So we chilled for another year in Milwaukee, and then and then within that year, you know, everything remained that it was like we were very open to live elsewhere and start a new chapter, live somewhere else that we wanted to try because of that. You know, it's all underlying. It's all built on that huge luxury of being able to work remotely and just having the option to do so. So we were still open already to like moving, but we had waited around then through the pandemic that first year. And through that year, honestly, just like some pretty cool, like personal stuff that I didn't anticipate happening. Long story short, like I could really get into it, but like long story short, there was like big epiphanies and revelations about water and about things that I want to do in water. There are a lot of things I was picking up at the time, basically board sports, you know, like I was falling in love with board sports about 2 years ago, because that was one thing I never really did as a kid, but like it a lot now. And that is like a crucial part of balance now for the music. So yeah, it's like a kind of a bit of a saga, and one that was lightly influenced by a microdose too, I will say, but just kind of like really, really made it clear to me that I really wanted to be by the ocean really bad. I fell in love with skimboarding. I don't know if you know what skimboarding is, but it's like a hybrid sport of surfing.
Yep.
And out here is where it's like, where it's really huge. And I was just realizing like I know a lot of people have, you know, a fear of open water and deep water. And I don't think that's unique by any means, but I certainly had felt that throughout my younger life. And yeah, it was kind of just big epiphanies that like, there are all these things I want to do, like surfing and skimboarding and things that feed me and like really balance my creative life. And I was realizing there's just like a silly fear and phobia of, you know, of that water phobia that was just holding me back. And I didn't want to do that anymore. And so it was crazy, because like I felt it really like immediately while we were still living in Milwaukee, like I was like more comfortable in water and everything. But anyway, like that was honestly like, that was like a big tipping point, you know, because then I just went to my wife and I was like, look, I know we were talking about New York, still love New York, but like, I really think it's smarter to be away from concentrated places, because this was still, you know, hot in the pandemic. And then I was just really upfront with her, like, yo, I want to be by the ocean really bad. And that's like, you know, even just looking at it as like a short-term move, because we have the opportunity to do so, like really want to be by the ocean. She fortunately is, you know, she snorkels. She's as in love with natural things as I am. So it was a fit. Like I didn't have to persuade her, but it was great. You know, she was down with it. She was like, yeah, I'm already in the headspace to move out of Milwaukee, and Southern California sounds very cool as long as it's not LA, like downtown LA. So that it was a mixture of having the luxury and opportunity to be able to move, which is no small thing. Like I was very thankful for that. And then, it wasn't so much moving for music. You know, it's funny, like a lot of people who heard about it in my life assumed like, oh, you're moving to LA, like for music. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not. I'm not moving to LA, and I'm moving there for music, but it is for my life. And in that way, you know, my life is holistically about music, because music is a huge part of my life. But yeah, it was a bit of a more unconventional path. But like, yeah, having that being said, like, I'm just super thankful about that we did do this move, because yeah, even this morning, you know, got up, went to the ocean, skateboarded for like 2 hours, got a workout in, you know, and then came back here. And it was a wild year period that that made the decision for us, but we've been super stoked, because it's really enjoyable out here for sure. So we're thankful.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ian, that's such a beautiful story, man. And it's the past 2 years have undoubtedly been tumultuous and continue to be tumultuous, but it's allowed, it sounds like you, it's allowed myself and so many other artists that I talk to, the opportunity to really refocus on life's priorities and try and figure out the direction that you want to go. And something that you said is, life is showing us, right? It sounds like you and your lady are tapped into, whatever this life force is. And you also mentioned microdosing, man. So, I'm kind of in a, spiritual renewal phase myself. So I'm curious as to what, kind of your spiritual practices are in recognizing that flow of life and trusting your intuition. So I guess what is it that you do on a daily basis to try and tap into that? And then of course, microdosing can be a fantastic tool to help get you there as well.
Yeah. I would love to hear more about that and your journey, because that sounds super exciting. But like, I'm as far as the microdosing part, it's funny because that was the one and only time, like that experience I mentioned was the one and only time I've even tried anything, and it was certainly a microdose. Mm. And I haven't since, but that's for no reason that I didn't think it was a profound experience or anything like that. It's just, that's kind of the nature of those substances too, right? Is like, they're not like booze and other things where it's like, oh, you get stimulated and you want to do it again. Like, you have an intense little journey, you're like, okay, like I'm good for a while type of thing.
Yep.
Which fascinates me more. But I'm definitely not like versed or experienced in hallucinogens, but I do really, really understand their power and value. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in like the societal paradigm shift of like, you know, there was a there's a really great book, I don't know if you know, but How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. It's really good book that is pretty recent, but I'm sure you would love it and know a lot that's in there. But it basically is showing you like, hey, look, here's these hallucinogens that went through like a 50-year period of having their research funding be taken away because of really societal and political fueled things. And it makes perfect sense, but it's a really great story of showing you like how, you know, it from basically, I don't know, at least the 70s to pretty much late 90s, you know, there was like a moratorium on any like good research around those substances. But so yeah, I'm a big believer in that, but like, I honestly am not like a huge user at the moment, but in a good pocket of being like, feeling like there's no rush, but I have curiosity. So definitely look forward to like trying new experiments as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel in any rush. It's good. But so I value those. I don't use those as far as like intentionally for a spiritual experience. Yeah, spiritually, it's been more so like a life journey for sure. Because I grew up in a very like evangelical Christian household, which many parts of that I really value, no doubt. And a lot of those things happened to benefit me musically, like a lot. Like I grew up in a church because my mom worked there, and that church happened to have awesome music ministry. And it was very culturally diverse too. So it was like, I learned how to play drums there. I learned how to, you know, my first musical collaborating experience was playing in a worship team and learning how to play not only with other people, but you're playing like not for yourselves. You're like playing, you know, for God. So it was a very different dynamic. And I like those things I value hugely. And I would never, you know, I really would never trade that. But getting into adulthood, there was a really, really muddy period of like, you know, learning to think for myself, because I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of ways that organized religion discourages, maybe even unintentionally discourages thinking for yourself in that way. But a bit of a muddy period there basically growing up in something and believing it, because, and there's so many familial ties and emotional ties that make it more complicated. But being able to, you know, live independently, go to college and live a life where you're asking questions independently and you're learning. Now I can say happily, like I'm at a good spot of, you know, I no longer have like anger towards, at one point I definitely had like anger towards organized religion and like what I feel like it withheld from being able to live and think for yourself and understand your own spiritual journey. But I feel that, so I feel at a better spot of not holding resentment for organized religion, just realizing that it's another path that people understand to be how they make sense of the world and how they make sense of spirituality. I know that my spiritual understanding is not quite in organized religion in the way that society, you know, behaves in organized religion. I definitely do think you know, it is certainly cliche, but like, I'm sure you can relate to this, that I definitely, that part of the spiritual understanding and practices I do are rooted in the natural world for sure. And so even the things I was talking about before, like the things that give me life outside of music and balance me, like board sports right now, like skimboarding and or snowboarding or like going around skating or whatever. It's all things that like a big part of that is like you're technically it should be accessible to all people. It's like you're playing in the earth and there's just, I know, you know how it is. You take one look at your Instagram page and it's like a vibe, you know, like you take hikes, you like, you're like an ultra marathon runner, right? Like
I am
crazy. That's nuts. Like, I don't even understand that, but more power to you. Certainly being in touch with the natural world or even with the musical world and creative world, like, it's very hard to verbalize at this point in my life too, but I know that those things speak to me as what I think God is more than anything else has in my life. And so there's a lot more. I know that people in organized religion that I've explained that to, that like doesn't make sense to them because they don't like necessarily see that there's guidelines for right and wrong, but I disagree. You know, I think we're all out here looking for the same thing 100%. And we all have such vastly different circumstances that it's no wonder we all end up in a different understanding and belief. But that's why I think it's crucially important to have empathy and patience, you know, even for like my situation where like maybe you grew up in a church that you are kind of frustrated that you were taught a certain thing. It's still certainly important to have empathy for those people that, you know, they're following their spiritual path just the same way you believe you're following your spiritual path. So, but practices would be like, definitely things in music that are meditative to me. I believe that's communicating with God, and anything in the natural world, I think is a direct line to God for sure. So that's as much as I know now, and just trying to be open to continuing to learn, you know, because if there's anything I know, it's that I don't know anything. You know, I don't know at all. So yeah, just being open to learn always for sure.
Yeah. Well, and Ian, thanks for getting personal with us, man. And just like you said, I think that is an important conversation to be had. And it's a conversation that similarly I've neglected for a while. And I think to my personal detriment. And similar to you, I grew up going to church, and I grew up in a small town in Iowa. And so I really did love the church that I went to. A lot of my friends were there. There was just such a, it was just surrounded by community love and support, beyond the religion. Mm-hmm. It was the people in there as well. And then, I think I followed a relatively natural path of becoming fiercely agnostic and rebellious towards organized religion, thinking that I had it figured out, and these individuals certainly did not, and so I followed that journey for a while, and it's kind of taken me to the point of just like you said, realizing that I don't know anything. And I think I had been for many years focusing on what I can do in my external environment and even within myself, whether it be running, nutrition, different types of biohacks to kind of control the way that I feel and control the situations around me. And that's where the detrimental aspect came in of like, oh, hey man, maybe the ticket's not trying to control and just going with the flow. And, I've almost finished, the book, The Surrender Experiment by, Michael Singer. And that was, in Jin Sai had suggested I read that book, and it's been truly phenomenal of trying to surrender to life's flow, to God's flow, to however anybody wants to describe it. And it's been a challenge to get out of myself and to try and reconnect with what I'll call God or that universal flow. And, but it has undoubtedly been a relief. And similarly, I've experimented with psychedelics a decent amount, and I haven't done a heroic dose in like 7 years because similarly, it's once you have that experience, you're not necessarily clamoring for that next one. But over the past three months, I've been completely sober from all substances, which has been a psychedelic trip in itself. So that's been interesting, and it's sort of unmasked how, back to the control aspect of how often I would try to control the way I feel or the environment around me, even with substances. So it's been an interesting ride, man, and it's really allowed, it's allowed me to ride that roller coaster of connection with something greater than myself. And then of course the challenges of dealing with a situation where maybe a beer or two would alleviate some stress relatively immediately. But over the past 3 months, I've really been sitting with those feelings of trying to figure out why they're happening and being okay with that they're happening. And by no means am I an expert on any of this, but it's reinforcing the idea of I certainly don't know. But I'm gonna continue on this and just like you said, I think board sports, there's something about board sports and with like with snowboarding, if you're carving down a mountain, like you're following the flow of the snow and the mountain. So I think it's a great analogy and metaphor for even following life, because you're taking gravity's lead, and yes, you're carving and you're steering the direction of your board, but there's other forces at play that are guiding you down the mountain or guiding you across the wave. So I think that's a perfect analogy. And
when you were saying, I just jotted down that surrender, you said surrender experience, or yep. what was that book,
the surrender, okay, experience.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool. That sounds experiment. Okay. Yeah. That sounds extremely interesting. Yeah. And when you were just mentioning, going with the flow and your approach, which also huge props, to the, straight edge for any amount of time that is like not only challenging, but like, so, such a fruitful experience, like, because everything you said, you're like, whereas when you use a substance habitually, to you're outsourcing all of that mm-hmm. inner emotional and mental work, like you're choosing to be like, okay, no, I'm gonna do the not easier thing and like yeah. sit and process. And so So props to you, because that's incredible. But yeah, I also just wanted to, I was going to say pretty much the same thing when you were talking about going with the flow is like, right, snowboard, you're submitting to gravity. I think of like the amount of metaphorical power in a wave is like so funny to me. Like there is so much metaphor to it, but that's another one is like, you know, waves are these results of hundreds of variables, none of which we have any say in. And then you're going out and trying to like harness the energy of that wave. You have no control. It's like literally, and it's like such a metaphor to life. Like you're going to experience these waves where you either decide like, I'm not going to take that because I'm going to get hurt, or I'm going to take this and I'm gonna, just going to do the best I can, because like there is no use in thinking that you can control any of the circumstances. But like the point is to flow with it and to flow with those circumstances the best you possibly can. So I love the metaphors in, yeah, and in all board sports. I think the metaphors there are just like ripe for the picking. It's like, it's great. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and Ian, I love that you brought up waves, because so the author of The Surrender Experiment, Michael Singer, I was listening to a podcast with him yesterday. It was kind of like this hybrid meditation podcast, and he was describing the mind as a body of water. And a body of water is inherently calm. It's not until it's disturbed by wind or dispersed by somebody throwing a rock in there that ripples and waves actually begin to create themselves. And so I was thinking about that in my own meditation practices. And then I was out for a run this morning around the lake that I frequently jog around, and it was extremely windy day. And on the north side of the lake, you can just see the beginning ripples that the wind is causing. And then by the time you get to the southern side of the lake, those waves are crashing on the rocks of the shore. And I couldn't be more grateful for such a powerful visual example within 12 hours of listening to that metaphor. And of course, the waves are going to happen, but I get in respect to the body of water being your mind and being in that inherently calm state, you begin that ripple, but then you do have some control on if that ripple turns into a wave that crashes on the shore of the other side of the lake, or do you just acknowledge and ride that wave, or do you act like the wind and continue to blow on it to make it bigger? I don't know. I haven't had enough time to reflect on the metaphor and what has happened literally in the past 12 hours of kind of hearing that metaphor and then seeing that metaphor. But yeah, I think really, really important conversations to be had, man. And it's even as I was sharing my spiritual experience, I could feel that resistance to even admit that there's a God or a universal flow of life, right? Like I've trained myself to be resistant to I suppose giving up that control to something higher than myself. And yeah, what a ride it's been. And I'm sure there's definitely going to be some listeners out there that are either staunchly agnostic or and may be telling us to shut up, or individuals that are on a similar path to us right now that are trying to feel
right.
More connected with something. But Ian, yeah, thanks for humoring us with in diving into to such a deep and subjective topic, man. But diving back to your story.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, thanks, man. I know I benefited from that, so thank you. So you started learning how to drum and playing music as a young kid in the church. Just kind of walk us through your musical journey to where you've been to where you're currently at.
Sure. Yeah. So that, as I mentioned, was definitely the church was definitely a starting point, you know, where I was able to initially learn mainly drums. Started literally on, you know, as like a kid in like had was always around the worship teams because, like I said, I grew up in there, so I knew everybody. And my mom was always there. I was, you know, I was like there all the time, type of thing. And then I was like too young to be on the worship teams, you know, but I was like wanting to really bad, and people knew me, so they were like, "All right, well, let's get Ian like some, he can start on congas, you know, and bongos." So like, you know, they hooked it up even right there, just like letting me start even on that. So started with that percussion, and then of course as I got a little older, was able to watch the drummers at that church play, you know, every Sunday, different services. And then like I'm definitely a very visual learner, and I prefer like self-education, I guess, because that's everything I've done thus far. And that was the same thing. Like, I feel like I really just sat and watched all those drummers. And then once I was finally able to get a drum kit, which my mom did not allow until I took piano lessons, which is a great idea. I was not stoked about it at the time, but of course, as an adult, I'm like, that was smart, mom. That was really smart. So had a little bit of knowledge starting in piano and music theory, just a little bit there. But drums was definitely like the fire that I could, like, I was very interested in that. A lot of that had to do with like what I was listening to at the time. But around that, you know, I would say like around middle school is what I feel, looking back, is when a lot of stuff started to happen musically, because there was obviously those things happening at church where I was able to start playing and start learning actually playing an instrument. But equally as important, I was like just falling in love with like listening to music. That's when I was just listening to, I just remember being obsessed with classic rock era stuff. I wrote, I think I had like 10 different book reports in middle school, and every single one I did on Jimi Hendrix. I would just pick a different thing in his life. And like, I knew that whole dude's life at one point for sure. Like, was obsessed with that era. So, you know, John Bonham, the drummer of Zeppelin, was like, naturally, I was like, I was hooked on drums, and I was like, yeah, that's what I think I could play. That's what I want to play. So that eventually worked out, was eventually able to get a kit and start playing relatively early, you know, around middle school. And then, had just like good environment in that I had an older brother that listened to awesome music, would have a bunch of burnt CDs that I could listen to. So I was getting hip to rap when I probably wouldn't have for a long time. I was getting hip to all these new, like indie rock at the time, you know, like punk rock, like different stuff, but just an older brother who was like, you know, had the ear and had the, he was the cool older brother that I could like listen to what he was listening to. He also played guitar. So he had a Stratocaster in the house with amp and guitar pedals that I never was really like supposed to touch, but of course I would all the time. So there were those things around me, you know, like a good environment for sure. And then on top of that, like, you know, my parents have always been anything musical. I mean, just nothing but supportive with those two. So all of the things that really you could ask for as far as a good environment. And then I went off to, high school was like the band era, you know, was able to play drums, found a handful of close knit friends that like, we were on that same vibe of like, we played an instrument, like we were wanting to play in a band. We were wanting to jam. So high school was like debaucherous, like, you know, that sort of band, environment, which was fun. I don't know if I like learn, like, I'm sure I learned a bunch, but it was a lot of just like reckless energy is what I like recall of it all. But a lot of playing in bands and stuff like that. And then by the time I got to college, I was I had some musical knowledge at that point, because I was continuing to play drums and all that, and a little bit of keys and a little bit of guitar here. But I was so, at that point, fed up with, like, I was fed up with the band thing because I wanted to make music. I wanted to, like, make it. Like, I wanted to make a song, like, finish a song.
Yeah.
But, like, the band dynamic, 99% of the time, it's going to be, like, there's one person like that, and then the three other guys that, like, are there to kind of hang out, and they don't really care, and they don't really, like, have initiative. So it was, like, a control freak thing that I was just, like, I want to have control over this and do it on my own, because every time I try to get together with a band, they don't want to do it as bad as I want to do it. So, like, yeah. Looked around. I had no knowledge of DAWs at all, but I was like, I think there should be something like that out there where you can, like, go on your computer and, like, I must have seen, like, the beginnings of it somewhere or something that I saw at that point. You know, that it was existing. So I was like, there's got to be a program where I can plug in the stuff, and that way I can put the guitar, I can put the keys, I can put the drums, and I don't have to worry. I don't have to rely on anybody else. You know, that was the kind of the thinking. So I found my buddy found me a crack of FL Studio and spent every single day in that program, I think, since. And that was over 10 years ago at this point. So, bought a proper version of FL Studio since, I will say. You know, I'm all about that. If you're learning, like, cracks are great, but the second you know you're going to use it more than a little bit, and the second you can have any amount of money to, like, just buy the proper thing. Cause, like, those developers, man, those, like, music tech developers, they are such unsung heroes. But, so yeah, that was basically the trajectory. It was really like instruments and like worship team / band upbringing, and then came very late from my perspective to the digital world and the DAW world, but tried to make up for lost time in college. Like I said, I was just like on there every single day, and then yeah, college worked out where SoundCloud was there, and so I started uploading on SoundCloud and started getting enough of a following and momentum where I was like, okay, I'm about to get my degree this year. It's far too late and it would be silly to drop out. So I'm going to get this degree in nutritional sciences, and then I'm going to just pursue music as soon as I left. So that's exactly what I did. And I got the degree, and then, just started pursuing. I wanted to do music full time. Like, I wanted that to be my living. So I started pursuing that as soon as I left college, and we're here. Yeah, this is pretty much the vibe.
Wow, what a great development, man. And Ian, I mean, this is going to be well over 60 episodes when this comes out, and through all of my conversations, I don't think mentioning the developers of like FL Studio and Ableton has ever come up. So I feel even in my own personal conversations, I have neglected the gratitude that those developers deserve, man. So thank you for saying that, because I really think that's the first time that's been said on this podcast, which is crucially important. We should thank the individuals that, yeah, true. Better late than never. Wow. So Ian, you take the leap straight out of college to pursue music full time. So walk us through, because I can't imagine it was smooth sailing the entire time. I have to imagine there was there was some learning to be done on the financial end of things to make this thing work. So how'd you do it, man?
Yeah, definitely the obligatory several years of just embarrassingly broke, just like so broke, just, you know, like but hungrier than you've ever been, and just like bounded and determined to make it work. But yeah, you know, to be safe, definitely like picked up hourly work, of course, right out of college. But I was like pretty strategic, because yeah, looking back on my strategy, like I was aggressively pursuing doing this for a living, because I mean, kind of how I felt was in college, there was like a 2-year period where I started to I don't know if you maybe could even like relate to this at all, being, like you said, more Midwest from Iowa, but I always have felt that being in the Midwest, this isn't even like a subjective like put down. There's not music industry there. There's not professional infrastructure mm-hmm. there. Like there's just not. So yeah. It's natural that like growing up, I had the feeling that like a lot of people treated it like, yeah, that's a hobby. Like, not my parents, mm-hmm. thankfully, but like a general consensus of say, like within your town or like even like, you know, high school, my friend's parents, for instance, you know, there's when you live around a tone of like, oh yeah, that's cool music, but like, you don't know anybody that makes a living. You don't know a music lawyer within 500 miles. You don't know, like, you know, it's natural that I think I felt growing up like, yeah, like a living is not doable. It's not viable because that's just what you see around you. But then in high school, especially, this really was, I mean, we're talking, you know, the SoundCloud era. Like, that was like really when the pickup of all these tools and digital-based tools where you can connect with supporters or fans or listeners were really taking off. So I felt like in college, I learned like, oh, I've been lied to this whole time. Like you can make a living out of it. Mm-hmm. So getting out of college, yeah, I looking back on it, I would classify it as just like aggressive. Like, yeah, that's like what I wanted because I knew my whole life, like how obsessed with music and creation I was. The only thing missing was I didn't think it was possible to like do it as a living. And then I was like, oh, you can't. So was just pursuing it very aggressively. And for that reason, like I didn't, you know, I had a solid degree that could have got me like a pretty decent entry level job for sure. You know, that would have like, that would have given me no reason to have financial strife. But I just knew that like, I was so scared of signing up too much for this professional life that I knew was going to be asking a lot more investment and engagement from me. I really like, I will say props to my like, whatever that was, 22, 23 year old self, because I was like, no, dude, like I want to find something. I don't care if it pays me dirt cheap. I want to find something that I go in, I trade in my time and they give me money and they are not pulling me into like some company lifestyle. They're not pulling me into like working overtime. Like I literally am just trying to exchange for money so I can go keep trying to make a living out of music. So took, I took jobs that were related to nutrition, the food industry, but they were like, yeah, I even remember the first job, the lady being like, so you can have this job, but like, why are you looking for this job? Like you have a bachelor's mm-hmm. degree in nutritional science. And I would just straight up pull her. I was like, because I'm going to be a musician. And she was like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, you know, luck. So shout out to Eastside Ovens. That was a vegan bakery. Yeah, no, they were nice. They were like supportive of it. But I'm sure, yeah, exactly. Like from that perspective, they were like, okay, yeah, cool, hot shot. But so. You know, did those things accordingly where like I made sure, yeah, like I was taking hourly work when I needed it that was as low investment as possible, just so that I could maximize time creating, maximize time learning more about, you know, the industry and maximize time just trying to get better at everything. And yeah, so there was a good old period post-college where it was like pinching pennies, but like just scrappy, dude, just working hard, sleeping. Dude, I remember I like got rid of my bed because, you know, back living with like roommates, like I started to get like all the, you know, I started to get monitors and I started to have a drum set in there where I could mic it. And then I had like so many, I had like a half year left on my lease and I was like, my buddy told me that he started sleeping on this rollout mat. And I was like, dude, if I get rid of my bed, that means I have all this, like I can get my kit in here. So there was a period even where I was like,
wow.
Yeah, dude, waking up, rolling up the mat, tossing it in the closet, and you're just like, music room, just scrappy. I love, dude, looking back on it, it's really great to think about how scrappy that was. But it was brutal with the financial insecurity, for sure. And I even like jumped the gun. You know, there was a point where at that point I was like doing anything I could to bring in revenue, because I thought that was the move, to just like put out as many as possible and then hone in once you see things that are sticking and that align with what I want to do. But, you know, I was like slanging instrumentals to any rapper that wanted to like toss some money my way. Like, I was doing anything possible, and definitely even jumped the gun where, like, you know, I thought like I had enough momentum financially to do it and left that, that vegan bakery. But then, it was like, you know, under a year, you know, floating. And then I was like, damn it, it was too early. So then I had to get what ended up being my last, hopefully, knock on wood, hourly job, at least the last hourly job I've had in a long, long time. And that was, delivering coffee third shift in a box truck. It was sick. I was like an independent contractor. I actually did that with Straylo. I don't know if you know the producer, Straylo. He's a good buddy of mine. But that was both our...
You guys did that together?
Yeah. We were both living in Milwaukee at that time. And he was like, yo, is this really good Milwaukee coffee roaster. And he was like, I just started... And he's doing the exact same thing as me, you know, like at the time and now he is as well. But you know, he was like, dude, I just got this hourly gig driving third shift for Colectivo, and like he's like, it's the perfect gig for us. Like, if you're looking for anything, it's the perfect gig for like us. It's third shift, you don't talk to anybody, they pay pretty well, you get free coffee. And like and I was like, sick. So did that job as I was continually, that was probably, I don't know, 3-4 years out of college, getting closer to gathering the financial stability and other stuff. But like I said, I jumped the gun on the first job. So I was really not messing around with that. And I was getting more serious with my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife. And, you know, she put it real straight. Like, she's like also, along with my parents, biggest support, always supported, like through that time, through being absolutely broke. But she was like, Ian, like, you know, you got a degree. There's no need for you to like not have money. And I was like, you know, I got a girl too. Like, I can't be this broke. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So got that job, got that other job that was much more like, I was much more responsible then. And I was probably a bit more like confident, because at that point I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I could see like, yeah, we're making the progress and it's coming, but like, just be patient and keep working. So yeah, worked that, it was doing the same thing, just, you know, scrapping, making music, releasing music and all that stuff every single day. But then probably, worked that job, that, coffee job for like a year and a half. And then, hung on to it a little longer than I needed to, because I jumped the gun the time before. And and I think that was just a maturity thing too. If you look from when I got out of college, like the naiveness of myself and like the lack of maturity as far as understanding what I needed to have in place for that. You know, I just wanted it bad, but I had a lot to learn for sure. But that span of, I don't know what it was, something like 4 or 5 years maybe, from college to like having a strong financial footing, just so much learning that happens and just so much maturity. So finally got to that point, maybe like 4 years or so after college, where I carefully left that job and I was like, I think we're good. I think I got this. No day is ever, you know, tomorrow is not guaranteed by any means. But yeah, I mean, that's like, ever since I was able to do that and go full time, that's, you know, a gift that I can't even express how enormous that is daily to me. I talked to Strelo and I talked a lot about this exact thing where, like, not only is it like on surface level, I get to do, you know, obviously what I'm passionate about full time, but it's like how it makes me a better person is very obvious to me. It's like being able to be in control of your autonomy and your schedule in that way means that, like, I'm so much more mindful in life and I'm so much more patient because I know that, like, yeah, I don't have anything to bitch about. Like, I don't know. Just feels as though, like, I being able to have autonomy over your time, there's no reason that I should be impatient with somebody or unkind to them or being selfish because I already have everything I could ever need. So it just, like, allows for a lot of mindfulness in my life. So it's a really beautiful, you know, reinforcing feedback loop in that way. But yeah, definitely had to go through those obligatory years of being dirt broke for sure.
Yeah. Well, and man, I mean, what a poetic and a romantic story, right? In regards to the journey to becoming a full-time musician. And I love everything you've shared about the lessons learned in both resiliency and maturity and financial management. And, cause so many of us are on that journey or have been on that journey in some sort of different fashion. And you're fearful of getting a real career because you don't want to get pulled away from your dreams. You don't want to adjust your lifestyle in order to say, oh shit, I need this full-time job to cover my lifestyle expenses. So, Ian, as we're nearing the end of this conversation, man, what advice would you have for an artist that is just now making the leap to becoming a full-time musician? What are some of the check boxes that they should have to ensure that they're ready to make that leap?
Really good question. And just to touch on what we've both said already is I know nothing. Like I'm an expert at nothing. So just take anything I do say with a huge grain of salt. But, yeah, at risk of sounding like cliche, really first and foremost, because I think this is a timeless piece of advice, and there are so many other things involved that are really unique to, like, the day and age that we live in, you know? But timeless advice is, like, really, there's nothing more sacred and important than your relationship with your creativity. So that's, like, in my opinion, that's like the nucleus from which everything is going to be determined, from which everything can work. You know, there's, like, a lot of instances. There's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of intentions out there. There's a lot of reasons that people make art and put it out into the world. And right now, more so than ever, you know, there's definitely a demand for people just to be on social media and seen and all these things. But, like, it really is no small task to, like, continually try to stay grounded in the fact that the only thing important is your relationship to your creativity and to your workflow and to your process and to the work that you're putting in. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you can follow and pursue that will streamline maybe your career. It'll maybe set you up for more opportunities or success, but there's, like, nothing that can replace the work. So I'm big on that. You know, it's, like, probably pretty old fashioned, but it's great, dude. Like, that's, like, what the whole point is, you know, that's, like, what makes, pursuing something like art great is, like, working, and there's never a destination. You're always either looking to try something new or to get better at what you're currently doing. So remember that, you know, always, if you can, to be continually trying to stay grounded in you and your work and putting in that work. It's one of those things, like, if you err on the side of that, you can not do a lot of other things, but like you're going to be doing the most important thing. So you still, I think, will be setting yourself up for success the best that you can. So that would be like my main advice. And then other than that, you know, like the tools and the technology available right now, even compared to the 5 to 7 years ago where I'm talking about, I'm just getting out of college. And, you know, at the time it was golden era SoundCloud. Like there wasn't even Spotify at that time. There wasn't that migration yet to Spotify. But sure enough, there was, because Spotify was doing a better job at something. So artists responded. So my point being, I don't necessarily know the specifics of what is the best way to utilize, not that I know what platforms in specific are the best thing to use if you're trying to start a career as a beat maker, producer, or whatever. But I do know that there are more platforms that have ever been available to you. So really take advantage of those, whether like a lot of them are in the digital space. So take advantage of them, but also a lesson that I've learned that's more important than finding the platform that's going to help you is, again, dude, something that we covered, like flowing like water. Like there's going to be, music industry is incredibly volatile. It's a whirlwind. It even always surprises me how fast it can change. But if you develop a skill of being adaptable and, you know, you don't need to know every platform at one time that's going to help you the most. You just need to be open and willing to adapt if you see, oh, this platform could help me. And maybe there's a shift, you know. There certainly could be a day in the not too far future where like Spotify is lacking in some way and another streaming entity comes along and does it way better. And there's going to be another migration. So it's going to be in an artist's best interest to be on top of that and to be open and willing to adapt and to do that. So I would say use all these crazy platforms and technologies we have at our disposal. Definitely use them in whatever way makes sense to you, if it does. And then really think about how adaptable you are. Think about, always keep in mind your adaptability. And then lastly, just to maybe add a third one that is not so digital, is to also never forget the value of tangible things and in-person collaboration, you know, learning an instrument tactilely, being able to play an instrument if you're interested, meeting up with people and creating together, you know, just because that's always needed. That's something there's no replacement. And look, I love the digital age. I love being able to send a buddy stems and they get to work on it and then they send it back. I love that. I really do. And that is getting nothing but more streamlined and more easy. But all the more reason to just throw out the reminder that, you know, in-person anything, collaboration, in-person conversation, in-person anything related to creating and art and music is just as valuable. So be sure to fill yourself and feed yourself with that kind of stuff too. Otherwise you're going to be holed up in your room and mentally unwell probably. So yeah, I think those would be my three.
Wow. Ian, beautifully said, man. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your insights with all of us. I know I'm walking away with this conversation with some new topics and aspects to reflect on. So truly thank you for taking the time out of your day to share all of this with us, man. And just lastly, if somebody wants to connect with you and have a conversation further, Ian, where should they go?
Yeah, just thank you as well. I appreciate being here. I love the podcast. I've been bumping several episodes of friends of mine that you've had as guests. So yeah, dude, I love what you're doing and appreciate being here. Yeah, you can hit me up anywhere on the internet pretty much. I have a website that's updated with anything that I've released latest or tour dates and stuff like that, ianewingmusic.com. And then otherwise, Instagram and Twitter, I'm definitely on those frequently. Instagram DMs, always a very easy way to reach out, and I'm certainly non-discriminatory. You know, I'll talk to anybody there. So website or Instagram and Twitter. Instagram is at Ian Ewing, Ian Ewing Music as well. And then Twitter is at Ian Diggs Hummus, because who cares about cohesiveness, you know?
Yeah. Wonderful. Ian, thanks again, man. For everybody tuning in, make sure to reach out to Ian. He could probably teach you a thing or two. I know he taught me a thing or two. So until next time, peace.
Peace out, dude.